Hello, everyone. This is Al with the CCW Podcast. Welcome to episode 4. She's back. Say hello.
Hey, everybody. This is Dagny.
Hey. Due to popular response, it seems like episode 3 was our most popular podcast yet. I think I'm going to have Dagny as a co-host of mine, and I hope the conversational tone of it, of this podcast, will be a little bit different and unique to the podcast world. A husband and wife duo talking about concealed carry and shooting. So this topic is going to be more about another trip we went shooting. We went to one of those ladies' shoots again. This is you might remember from episode 3 that we talked about going to one before, and it just so happened that this past weekend was another one, so we decided to go to that one. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Same group of people, except the first one we went to was back in September. That was at the outdoor range. This was at an indoor range. So, you know, very similar, but very different in a lot of ways. And I prefer the outdoor range. I know that now, for sure. But it was really nice because having already sat through the training back in September, I just had to fill out, you know, paperwork with contact information for the new year. And then we didn't have to sit through the training again. So we got...
To remind everyone, there's an orientation program. It's a program, this lady shoot is geared towards new lady shooters and men who know to get out of the way. So if you've gone through their two-hour, I think it was a two-hour orientation about safety rules and how to handle a firearm, you can go out into the range before everyone else and shoot before all the newbies get out there. So it was quite a different experience in that sense. We didn't have any training that we needed to go over or anything. So we headed out to the indoor range and was allowed to basically have the pick of the litter of all the firearms, and it seemed like there were a lot more firearms today.
There were that last time. Yeah, there were different calibers. I think the first time back in September, it was just, well, as far as little handguns, it was all 22s.
Yeah.
And 9s.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday they had a lot more revolvers. They had some 380s, a whole table of basically concealable handguns, which was right up my alley. They had a whole bunch of 380s. At the outdoor range, though, they also had somebody who had some assault rifles, and they also had like metal targets if you wanted to kind of take a shot at that, so to speak.
We're not into the assault rifles yet. I think
I shot it. I had no idea where it went.
I have plenty of pictures of her on the assault rifle, but that was this past fall, I guess.
Yeah.
And this time it was all just handguns. They had a lot more 380s. I think what it is that a lot of people who are part of this gun club bring their own personal collections out so that people can share them and give them a try.
Yeah, I think every gun that was there, they had 4 tables, and each end of like the 6-foot table was aimed at a distinct target. So there were 8 firing targets once it was fuller in there. And every gun in there was owned by one of the instructors or supervisors. And you could take your own. It had to be in the case, and they had to, you know, take it out and check your ammo and everything. We didn't, you know.
We didn't try to shoot our own firearm. We wanted to explore more about what they had to offer. And I guess we could talk about some of the firearms that we did give a try. If you want to go first, or I can, it's up to you. Where did you start? Do you remember?
Where did I start?
I believe you started with the 22s. And it was that odd aluminum.
Oh, yeah. There was the semi-automatic 22s. They had a lot. And I think I started with those just because it makes me feel more confident. Because they are so smooth to fire, and I'm pretty accurate with them. So I did like maybe 3 or 4 rounds out of a couple of the 22s. And the one, the guy was really excited. You know, the whole table, except for like 3, and I bet there were close to over a dozen, maybe closer to 24 guns. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All but three were his. And the one he put me on was this 22. It was a long rifle. And it had these red grips and red barrel. And he just, like, modified it. They were aluminum. And then the barrel was, like, lined with stainless steel. Yeah. So it was very light.
They looked kind of space age, if you can imagine what a space age gun would be in a 50s movie or something.
Yeah. It was really cool. Really light and comfortable. And the first round went off fine, I think.
Yeah.
And then, I'd go to pull the trigger and it wouldn't fire. And he'd pop it out and say, oh, you probably, like, he was explaining the bullet, which is useful for me because I really don't know a lot. And
it seems like, yeah, the 22 long rifle cartridge, being a rimfire cartridge, is sort of notorious for being struck and not going off just because of the nature of the 22 rimfire. I think that's what he thought was happening, was it was the hammer was striking, or whatever it was that was striking the back of the rimfire. It wasn't hitting it hard enough, or we just had a bad 22 round. But
well, so he reloaded that same bullet, and he shot it, and it went off fine. So he was thinking that's what it was. And then he handed the gun back to me so I could, continue on with what I'd loaded into the magazine. And the next round, like the very first one after he shot it, wouldn't fire again. And so he was looking at it, and what he determined was that the new grips that he'd put on when I was squeezing the grip, that the insides of those grips were interfering with the feed. Right. So he just set that whole gun aside and was going to have to tinker with it some more.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
That's too bad. He was very excited to show that little pistol off.
Yeah, I felt a little embarrassed for him, if that makes sense. Like, he was really excited about it, and then it didn't work, but it was cute.
To give you a little bit more info, there were about four or five tables, and each table had about 20, maybe 12 to 20 guns on them. So we were looking at about 80 different firearms, or 60 different firearms.
Yeah, and I mean, they're really great, laid back. I mean, we never really, it's been so long since I went through the training, but their training made me really confident. And, I talked about it on the last episode where once I calmed down at the indoor range last Monday, a week ago today, is when I, recalled everything they taught me and, started getting more accurate with my shots. And so it was just really, it's a good atmosphere. And
yeah, I think at that particular table is where I tried the Smith & Wesson J-frame aluminum alloyed little snub nose.
It was hammerless, right?
It was hammerless as well. Yeah, very good. And I really liked it. It was not nearly as much kick as I thought. And to that particular ladies' shoot trip, I basically only shot revolvers. And with one notable exception, or two notable exceptions, it was all revolvers for me. So I had a really good time shooting revolvers. It's much longer trigger pull, and I'm used to that short, crisp trigger, I guess you could say, with my 1911. So it was quite a bit different experience, and I'm starting, I think, to become a revolver guy. And someday I might find myself holding one of those and carrying one in a pocket or something. But to move on, what else did you want to talk about in terms of the different firearms we tried?
Well, you just mentioned that you focused on revolvers. I think I only shot one revolver.
Mm-hmm.
And I know so many people recommend that women, if you're going to carry the revolver, because there's so much less that can malfunction. I mean, you point and shoot, and there's less complications. And the one that I tried, the 22 revolver, it was the hardest pull I've ever encountered. It was really long pull. The gun was really heavy, and I think he loaded it full, so five, it was a five or six rounds. I think it was five.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, my trigger finger literally almost cramped trying to pull. It was just such a hard pull, and trying to finish everything that had been put in the revolver, my arms and my shoulders were getting tired from trying to keep my sights during the long pull and all of the different rounds. It was it wasn't fun.
It was a very heavy gun, right?
Yeah, it was heavy. I mean, my shoulders and stuff were sore after a whole afternoon of shooting anyway, but that one put me over the edge for sure. And I don't know how accurate I was because of that either.
Yeah, it was hard to tell. It was a darker indoor range, and they had the targets lit up, but it was still kind of hard to tell where we were shooting. One of the instructors really complimented you on your accuracy, though. What did he say?
No, it was at the it, well, at the end, I'd say we said that it took about maybe 2 hours of training for the class,
Right.
and we got to shoot during that whole time, just whoever was there early, and there were less than a dozen of us, so really a lot of one-on-one coaching. And when they, called a ceasefire to bring everybody in, and it was packed, the guy at the table I was shooting at said, "Oh yeah, I remember you. I remember thinking I didn't want to be in front of you if, something was going on." That was hilarious. He remembered me from back in the fall because he was at that ladies' event
That's
too.
right. Yeah, he's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
What else? Where else did we go? We went over to that 380 table.
I shot the one table had just well the one station at the one table only had four guns. I had three semi-automatic 22s, and then it had a 9mm.
That's right. His portion of that particular
And
table.
he was superb on giving me feedback on my grip and my form and what I was doing right and wrong. And I noticed improvement when I moved on to other stations. In fact, when I went back to the 380 and concealable table, I just picked that gun up and owned it. And the guy said, "Oh, that's a great grip." And I don't think he knew, he didn't know that the guy three or four stations down had taught me what I was doing, but
Well,
that was good
let's
reinforcement.
talk about that guy three or four tables down. What was he talking to you about, and do you remember some of the tips he did give you?
He really worked with me on how to butt my hands together at the back of the grip towards the side. I'm right-handed. I am left eye dominant, and I don't
Cross
know,
dominant,
cross,
yeah,
yeah.
cross-eyed
And I
dominant.
don't know if any other women are listening to this, or men trying to get their women involved or whatever. But supposedly, it's something like 50% of women are cross-eye dominant, which
Yeah.
is something really, really important to know. Al and I kind of went back and forth. He's like, "No, you're not," and I'm like, "Yeah, I think I am," and
Now I
I
think I
am.
am too sometimes.
Yeah.
So, but basically what you do is if you're right-handed, that means that your left eye is your dominant eye, and also vice versa. If you're left-handed, that means your right eye is dominant, and that's cross dominance, cross-eye dominance.
And really, I guess for like
It's
handguns,
quite common, I guess.
it's not as much of an issue as if you were to get into like rifles, because the sights are so important, and I haven't shot that, so if it's irrelevant, I'm kind of getting off on a tangent here. But being right-handed shooter, left eye dominant, so my right thumb at the back is going to be on top of my left, and he was just teaching me, I guess, like the first joint on your thumb closest to your fingernail, and then between your first and second joint is where you want, like, that third joint of your other hand to butt into it. So the joint of your thumb that's way back right at the wrist, and it just kind of cups it there. And then if you have your two thumbs and the pointer finger on your shooting hand, your trigger finger, all parallel, what happens is the non-dominant hand's thumb tip is basically even with the tip of your trigger finger when you're just pointing all of your fingers straight ahead.
So her right index finger is basically at the same point as the tip of her left thumb.
And they very much emphasized all of the fingers being parallel.
Aiming towards the target, basically.
They also, something that, Al reads and watches as much training material as he can, and they have seemed to emphasize, they might call it 50-50 grip between the two hands, or 100-100, like you're using every ounce of your strength. What they told me, and it really seemed to make a difference for me, was 70-30, 30 with your trigger hand and 70 with the other, because if you're using that force in your trigger hand, when you go to pull the trigger smoothly, you can't do that smoothly with that strong of a grip, and that's when your sights go wild or you end up jerking the trigger. It all results in poor aim.
Yeah, all the guys over there seem to indicate that the strength of your grip comes from your non-dominant hand. So if you're a right-handed shooter, that left hand is the one that provides the grip strength. Now, the stuff that I've been seeing and the stuff that seems to me, like Dagny said, I've been reading a lot and listening to a lot of podcasts and watching videos. I think 100-100 is the easiest way to remember, meaning that you grip with both hands as hard as you probably can. Back it off just a little bit, and then there you go. I find with my 1911, I got to grip it with pretty much a crushing grip, as Masa you would say, or someone like that. But that's the way for me to guarantee 100% reliability out of the firearm. I mean, it's pretty reliable otherwise, but if I grip it the way I need to grip it, that's pretty much what I call 100-100. It works. And I think that if you're ever in a situation where you're about to fire that weapon, you're going to be at an adrenaline rush like never before. So 100-100 is easy to remember, and you know what? You'll probably be at 100-100 anyways. So
yeah.
Anyways.
Kind of dovetailing with the way to hold that grip, I found possibly why when I shot a J-frame at the last event in the fall, it really hurt my wrist on my right hand. It felt like all of that impact, I felt it in that back joint of my thumb into my wrist. And I know they're not pleasant guns to shoot, but it just, I mean, it hurt. I only shot one round and I had to just give it back. And I think that part of it was that I might have had my grip high, but I didn't quite have my right hand wrapped around it. I kind of, if you can imagine, rotating it kind of clockwise around. And when you get your thumbs placed together the way I was taught yesterday, or 2 days ago now, it just, you know, by default, my right thumb was not at the back of the grip. It was more to the left side of the grip. And so it was like maybe the webbing and the full length of my arm taking that impact, not that joint by my wrist. I don't know if you can envision how I'm describing this, but it made a difference in how the recoil was felt for me.
Right. It's sort of like shooting. I always draw comparisons to the martial arts, and it's kind of like locking the bones in your forearm and in your wrist and in your fist so that it creates one line when you're throwing a punch. That prevents it provides greater resistance to breaking bones in your fingers if you kind of align everything together into one straight line. So meaning your forearm bone and your wrist bone and your knuckles, you could draw a line straight through. If you're drawing it like a constellation, it would be aligning three dots and it would just go straight through. That's the same thing you want to do with your firearm. You want to put the butt of that weapon right into the palm of your hand, to the point that if that butt kept going through your arm, it would go right through the forearm and create one giant line. And that would greatly reduce the felt recoil.
Yeah, it really did help for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, as far as other form, the big thing that he noticed was I had a tendency, I was wanting to dip my head to meet the sights. And he said, bring the gun up to your line of sight. Don't take your head down to the gun. And that really helped too. That's probably part of why my shoulders and neck were so sore. I was doing it wrong half the time.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that there's nothing wrong with dipping your head. I think in a defense situation that, you know, a lot of people say you will sort of crouch down and kind of shrink yourself and make yourself a smaller target. So I don't know.
Well, a lot of these people too, I should mention, we should both mention, they do competitive shooting. A lot of these people are really, you know, good.
Right. Yeah,
good aims.
Some of them are sponsored shooters, I guess.
Yeah, so they might have a little bit different. And I noticed they were having people stand square with the target, and a lot of times, like, I was shooting staggered, which also helps with recoil for me since I'm small, to have, like, my right foot behind my left but still shoulder width apart.
Yeah, I'm definitely a proponent of that staggered stance, too, and I think that is also because of the previous martial arts experience I have. I think
it's a fighter stance.
It's a fighter stance, and it's a natural stance, and I think you're most balanced, obviously, at that stance from front to back, side to side. And if you need to ever run, I mean, that's a sprinter stance, sort of, you know, the staggered stance. You can go front, back, left, right pretty easily. So
I guess the last thing feedback-wise that helped me was the one gentleman was telling me, you know how your sights need to be aligned, but everybody weaves a little. There is a natural weave. Nobody's going to hold a gun perfectly still. But what you'll see if you pay really close attention is that it naturally kind of works in this rhythmical figure eight when it's weaving. And you kind of get a feel for where you're at. Not that you guess when, you know, you're going to trigger it, but that you can kind of learn yourself in that weave, it kind of time it or to understand that when you're close to that center of that figure eight, that's when you're going to be right on if you've got the target right in your sights. So that was just an interesting point. I don't know that it helped me at all. The targets were small. And
I think,
far away,
I mean, I think that if I ever, as a new shooter, you know, I think if I'm ever way off the mark and I still from time to time find myself a little low and left or a little high and right even, it's because I do kind of anticipate, okay, now pull the trigger. And that's exactly the type of thing that he was saying. No, no, no. There's gonna be a lot of. There's gonna be a little bit of wobble. Just by even the best shooters have a little bit of wobble, and you know, shaking. And I think he wanted us to encourage ourselves to just get used to it. And I think that figure eight analogy was really very relatable. You can kind of see that little pattern emerge, and then you kind of just get used to it. And kind of try to pull it right when it's in that middle of that figure eight. But if you don't, I mean, you can still shoot very accurately if you don't anticipate the trigger pull and just let it smoothly roll. So, yeah, I mean, I to this day, I think that my most accurate shots are going to be the ones where I expect it to come. It doesn't really surprise me, but you just kind of naturally flow with it, you know. It's just the amount of pressure before your shot and after the shot is exactly the same. You kind of follow through. For all you basketball players out there, you know, the shot in the air, you sometimes leave that arm in the air to just kind of remind you of that follow through, keep it there, and you know the good form when you see it and feel it. So anyways,
I'm trying to think of what else. You kind of reminded me of the other couple of guns that I shot, and then I guess you take over on what you shot on Saturday. I shot the CZ75 9mm, very smooth. I was a little nervous. It was, I think, the only 9 I shot that day, the only 9 I've shot since last fall. And last fall, I think it was at a Beretta that I shot, and I mean, I really struggled. I don't think I even hit the target, let alone the bullseye.
I think you shot a Smith & Wesson MMP.
Okay.
Yeah, last time. This time you did shoot a CZ-75.
And it was, I mean, I shot it right after shooting some 22s, and it was very controllable. I was very surprised. It was heavier, so that helped. And you shot that and really liked it, so you'll talk about that in a minute. I'll just finish up real quick here then. I also tried a Taurus Slimline.
Yeah.
And that was at the concealable table along with a whole bunch of 380s. And I did try the car again, the one that I tried last week.
The P380.
Yeah. And still really like the car, you know. That was the last gun I shot. I figured I should go back to the table and
this
give it a whirl.
This one didn't eject right into her forehead.
Yeah, that was a good thing. Yeah. And actually, that's the time where the guy was like, yeah, that's a good grip when I got up there. And I just, it was nice. That was when, at that point, all of the class had been released. And I think we stood in line for 20 minutes to half an hour for me to just try that gun one more time. And then we left because all of those people were new and it was just going to take a long time.
We didn't want
to
get anyone's way. And there were, I would say, about 80 people or so.
I mean, it was packed. 100 people. And a lot of, I'll talk about this later, but there were a sizable number of minors, which was really, I don't know if surprising is the word. I was impressed, I guess.
Half dozen kids under 18, for
and
sure.
I mean,
maybe
some
12.
Really, yeah. And then what I would say about the Taurus Slimline, I think I had handled one in a gun store.
Yes.
Yeah. And really liked how it felt. Being that I have small hands, it felt nice. It was not fun to shoot. I don't even know if it was a recoil issue, but it was the trigger pull was long and hard in the beginning. I mean, they all had long trigger pulls. But for me, then it got to the end where it was an easier pull and it didn't go off. And it did that several times. And the guy was like, all right, let me look at it. You know, I wasn't pulling the trigger all the way back. And so like at the very end of this long pull and then a short pull phase, it was almost like, I didn't have the right part of my finger even on the trigger, and that's why, but I almost couldn't finish the pull. It was a weird pull. Didn't like it at all.
Yeah. He also had a SIG P238 that we never shot, but he had problems with it. So that was an interesting thing, considering what we were having experience with. His was having a failure to eject. Ours was a failure to feed, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that the P-238's the early favorite in our 380 search is at least around here having some problems. I know they're great guns, and I know if they're working for you, you know, more power to you. It's just our experiences, and we just thought we'd note that.
Oh, and the one other thing is multiple coincidences there. The car that I liked is actually owned by like two of the instructors, and it's the carry gun for the one man.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a little bit of
the car
further reinforcement.
P-380, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm definitely leaning that way, but not ready to make that final decision.
If I can, yeah, jump in. I was tremendously impressed with the CZ-75. I'd been firing mostly revolvers that day, so I was almost surprised at how smooth the trigger was. Excuse me. It was my favorite semi-auto of the day. And I definitely enjoyed firing that gun. I think most. I think that was my favorite firearm I shot all day. Now, I didn't get to shoot too many semi-autos. I shot about a half dozen revolvers, including that Smith I talked about earlier. I also shot a 8-shot Smith revolver that was chambered for .357 Magnum. Didn't get a model number on that, sorry. But it was all stainless, I think. It was quite heavy. I only shot the .38 Special off that because I don't think they had .357 on there. Available ammo, but that would probably be my second favorite. The idea of having 8 rounds of .357, he said you could carry it. It was a pretty large snub-nosed revolver, but the idea of having 8 rounds of .357 really, really is appealing to me, and it has as many rounds as my 1911 if I have one in the chamber. So that was pretty cool. And I also got a chance to shoot the Judge, put some .45 Long Colt in there. It also shoots the .410 shotgun slug, I believe. I don't know a lot about shotguns, I hope that's right. But I shot the .45 Long Colt, a couple rounds out of that, and that was quite the experience. You felt like Dirty Harry or something with that sucker in your hands, and I really appreciated him letting me try that. Oh, and the one last revolver I tried is the Ruger LCR. Well, one thing about that one is the recoil felt a lot different. Instead of pulling up on the gun and the recoil and kind of shooting the nose up, it felt like the pressure was all in my palm, and that was kind of neat. I kind of liked that, and much more more similar to the 1911 that I have, you know, and the fact that I just feel it mostly in the palm, just pushing straight back into me. And the last, the other semi-auto I tried was the Car PM9. I know Bob Main has one of those at the Handgun World podcast, and boy, I was surprised. It was snappy, you know. I thought it was kind of light in my hands, and it didn't really give it a crushing grip or anything. So first round, just shot right up in my hand, and so and nothing unmanageable, of course. You know, you just kind of locked down a little bit tighter, and you know, fired off like 5 or 6 rounds off that. And it was really nice. It was, I don't know if I'd want to carry it, but I like the PM9. You know, I'm still a 1911 guy, I guess. What else?
I don't know. My note page is all a mess here.
Yeah, we're using notes, people. This is a first for us.
I thought just some random comments about the experience this time. I mean, it was packed. We've only been to 2, but they were both packed now. The demographic, I thought, was interesting. There were, like we'd already mentioned, a sizable number of young kids. They all, of course, had to have adult supervision with them. They were with their parents, maybe even grandparents. And then I felt like I noticed more women, 40s, 50s, and up, alone, that weren't there necessarily with husbands, which was kind of cool, you know.
Very cool. You hope that they weren't there because of some sort of incident, that they're just there like we were because it's something they wanted to get handled and wanted to learn more about.
Yeah. And then the children, the kids, the minors, When we got there and didn't have to sit through the class, there was a boy who was probably only like 9 or 10.
He looked very young. Yeah.
He was too small to even try to shoot, and he was there with either his dad or his grandfather. I would hate to presume wrong. And he was just excited, and he was so serious, and it was awesome. You know, they didn't hang around too long. He just got to see it, and I think they only stayed for like half an hour and left. But there were girls too. There was a girl who looked like she was all of 13, and she shot.
That little boy there was, you know, the range officer made a point to say, "Hey, you know, this is a very serious thing, and if I see you playing around, I'll ask you to leave." And the little boy was very serious in his nodding. He understood it all, and he behaved better than some of the adults, for sure.
Yeah. You know,
he was a good kid.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Other little... Oh, a funny thing. We we came home and kind of changed, and we were going to go meet up with some friends in the evening, and... We came home after we'd met up with the friends, and our cats were playing with a 9mm shell on the stairs, which really freaked us out.
Yeah, I was walking up the stairs, and I picked it up, and I was like, what? And it was a 9mm Luger shell casing.
And what we figured out must have happened was I had longer jeans on that I had rolled, and I think that it, obviously at least that one shell casing had landed in the cuff. And none of our friends or family know that we have an interest in guns, let alone that Al carries. So it could have been a really awkward moment if that had fallen out of my pant cuff at the get together.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's you know, we'll talk about Andrew from Minneapolis's email later, but basically he wanted to know a little bit more about who and why, I guess, who I am and who that Dagny is. And one of the reasons I'd like to keep it a little private to the extent possible is because it is sort of an unknown thing. I'd hate to get outed by a podcast. You know, my family doesn't really know, and Dagny's family doesn't really know, and it's just something that we'd like to keep private. And from the stuff I've read, it's nobody's business whether or not you carry. Whether or not you tell your friends and family is entirely up to you. If you do remember, I do have a shooting buddy of mine that does know.
And he's very, very open.
Yeah, almost to a fault.
Like, we'll be having dinner in a restaurant, and he'll be talking just normal volume. It seems like it's louder than normal when you don't, you aren't used to talking about it, you know.
You know, enthusiasm works in both ways. Sometimes I like to keep it a secret, and other people show their enthusiasm by telling everyone they know and everyone within earshot about it. And I think that's where he lies. He's a very jovial man, and I would never... I would never prohibit anyone from being passionate about something they really care about and love. It's just our particular approach is to keep it private. And, you know, the first time anyone finds out is when they're on the wrong end of it, and you're in complete justification to use it. So, obviously, I'm more comfortable sharing it with strangers than I am with my family and friends. So, I think... keeping it a secret amongst the people closest to me is probably why I feel the need to kind of share it with someone and talk about it with someone, because in my day-to-day life I don't have that opportunity other than with my one shooting buddy and with my wife. So sometimes she's a little sick of it, I'm sure, because it sometimes is a 24/7 topic for me. I can't seem to get enough of it. So while the iron's hot, so to speak, I figured that the podcast was the way to go. And, you know, from the numbers that I can track, it's been awesome. And it looks like episode 3 was by far the most favorite. So I think that's has a lot more to do with Dagny than me. But I think we work well together, so maybe this might be a common occurrence to have two people on the podcast rather than just me. Let me know what you think on that. But anyways, where were we?
I don't know that we have many other comments based on our notes. We did stop into a new gun store this afternoon, and
there's a gun store about half hour away, and we checked it out and didn't have high expectations, but one of the things that I did want to look at that I haven't had a chance to shoot yet is a Glock. I've grabbed and felt a Glock 19 a lot of times, and that seems to be the gun du jour by the CCW luminaries. They seem to think it's a perfect compromise, I guess. It's very concealable, 15 rounds, a 9mm, and 100% reliability, or at least, you do hear about the occasional problems, but most people can dirty up a Glock and never have to worry about cleaning it, and the thing will still run. So we wanted to go to that. I've been wanting to go to that new gun, that gun store I had never been to, and we went in and didn't really get, the owner was there by himself and really didn't get any customer service, I guess. So he left us alone, which is appreciated, and so we just kind of window shopped it. They did have a Glock 19. I didn't get a chance to hold it, but I've held one before, so it was just, I kind of wanted to go in looking to establish a new contact, but didn't seem like the guy was in the mood to make any friends.
Yeah, he was otherwise occupied
on the phone with the distributor and making orders, so that's all right, that's all right. I wasn't in there to buy anyways, so he probably read that on my face and moved on, but it was a little disappointing, I guess. Anyways, we can wrap this up with my first email. We've gotten a lot of downloads and a lot of good response to that, but I just had, we've had quite a bit of a dialogue with myself and Andrew out of Minneapolis, and shout out to you, Andrew. Thank you for listening and for emailing me. And if you want to follow in Andrew's footsteps, please feel free to email me or Dagny at ccwpodcast@gmail.com. And basically, Andrew said that he enjoyed the podcast and basically asked me what 1911 I had. And, I guess I can tell everyone. It's a Smith 1911, Smith & Wesson 1911. I'm a Smith guy, apparently. And it's the Pro Series subcompact 3-inch barrel 1911, and it's been awesome. So,
if I can say something about Al, he started his search with his mind and his heart set on a Taurus, but he's very much about quality, and it didn't take much for him to get talked into what is perceived as the best, and he has been nothing but happy with his choice, so it's worked out very well.
Yeah, and to, before, people get shocked or anything, the Taurus, this was before I even knew anything about firearms, and went on the website of the local gun store, not the one that we visited today, but sort of the juggernaut gun store in our area, and I noticed that they had these really sleek, all-black 1911s with tactical rail clip rails on it. I didn't know what those were at the time, but when I saw the pictures, I was like, whoa, this is pretty cool. And they wanted $5.99 for it, and so that got me in the door to that place. And when I ended up looking at it, it was all right, but it didn't feel right. It didn't fit right, and whatever it was, I immediately discounted it and just didn't do it. And ever since then, you kind of hear these stories about that particular brand, but I'm really trying to stay away from bad mouthing any particular brands, because I very much understand that what works for some doesn't work for all of us, and vice versa. So the Smith 1911 really worked well for me, and I would recommend it to anyone looking for a carryable 1911. That being said, I wish they made a 4-inch barrel 1911 with a bobtail. I know that they make the 4 1/4-inch with the same bobtail, but for some reason I just envision myself carrying a 4-incher rather than a commander size. I know that's pretty picky, but I guess I am pretty picky.
Yeah, he is, folks.
What else did Andrew say? Oh, yeah. He wanted to know what state I was in, and I guess if you want to know the answer to that, folks, give me an email, and we're not in the market to just kind of broadcast that into the world. But We are in the Midwest, I'll give you that. And Andrew, being in Minneapolis, you know where he is, so he might be easier to find than me. But anyways, he had nothing but nice things to say, and I'm really glad he emailed me, because it really was something that is nice to hear. You know, you never know who's listening, and if anyone is even listening.
It was kind of like a light in the dark. Yeah. We know people are pulling it up and listening, but to get some feedback was really wonderful.
And he told me that the reason that he listened is because I said that I think it's your duty to protect your wife if you're a husband. It's your duty to protect your wife, and I think that says a lot about Andrew as a person, too. So it's good to know that I have listeners, number one, and number two, that they have their head on straight and seem like good people. So that's awesome. Thank you for listening, Andrew, and I hope we continue our dialogue, my friend. So other than that, do you have any last words? Or parting words? I keep saying last words. Will you be the co-host of the CCW
podcast? I will gladly co-host. I don't know. You know, mine will be more the journey of attaining the concealed carry permit or license. And Al's already there. So if you have specific topics you'd like us to address, particularly me, because I'm going through the hoops or preparing to, you know, let us know what you'd like to hear in future episodes.
Where can they email you, Dagny?
The CCWpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, just ccwpodcast@gmail.com. ccwpodcast@gmail.com. We'll eventually maybe set up an email for her directly, but right now we're kind of pooling it. So yeah, I'll make sure she reads it and make sure she answers it. Don't worry, I'm not going to put on a wig and email for her.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, and one last thing, product review, quick product review. I've been really... if you remember correctly, I was looking at another carry mag, and I ended up finding one. It's a match grade from Chip McCormick. It's a 7-round flush fit stainless steel magazine. It feeds my Plus P Remington Golden Saber 185 grain perfectly. And I can't say enough about Chip McCormick magazines. They really impress me. We'll see how they do. They're still relatively brand new, so I'll do a follow-up in a year or so. Let's see how they, if I'm still around doing this stuff. But so far, so good. I highly recommend it. So give it a shot. Chip McCormick, cmcmags.com. I don't get anything for that plug, and I don't expect anything for that plug. I'm just giving you the truth, and it works for me. So with that, quick vouching for product. I think that will wrap up episode 4. She's back.
See you later, guys.
Thank you. Stay tuned.